everybody is saying that India is shining, India's startup ecosystem is shining. How is public investor viewing the startup ecosystem in India?
Zomato, in many ways, is the bellwether of our startup ecosystem. Quick commerce today is seen as a segment which will probably take away a lot of share from both your, you know, mom and pop kirana stores as well as the horizontal e-commerce platforms. Yeah. Who wants deliveries in 15 minutes, yes. Right? Who cares? Arre yaar, ye toh chalega nahi. Look at it now. Everybody wants delivery in, you know, 15-20 minutes, right? People are willing to pay for that convenience, right? The kind of questions that some of these public market participants would ask you was absolutely insane. Arey yaar, ye founder ne na golden visa karaya hua hai. What if, you know, this guy leaves the Indian shore? Arey yaar, uska 15-20% company mein pada hua hai. Oh yaar, these founders have done 50 to 100 crores of secondary. They've got 5% in the company. What if they leave the company? Yeah. I mean, these are the kind of questions that as private market investors, we never thought about.
Then why is public market punishing Paytm?
Okay, so
Hi, this is Siddharth Ahluwalia. Welcome to the Neon Show. I'm your host today, and I'm going to uncover the story of Indian public markets with Kashyap Chanchani, who is the founder of Rainmaker Group. Rainmaker Group is a venture capital investment bank in India, operating for the last 8 years in the venture ecosystem in India, and they have consistently been among the top three in this venture ecosystem. So Kashyap, welcome to the podcast. So excited to have you here.
Hi, Siddharth. Thank you so much for inviting me, and very, very excited about our conversation today.
So everybody is saying that India is shining, India's startup ecosystem is shining. Today in this episode, we are going to uncover it with data, right? And the ultimate exit for a startup is with public investors, not the private investors that are exiting it, right? So how is public investor viewing the startup ecosystem in India? How are they viewing the exits in India? I think that's the true lens that we want to uncover in today's episode. So let me start by, like, how many startups are listed in India today?
Siddharth, in toto, I think about 24 of our venture-backed startups are listed in the country today. So these would include startups like, companies that started with a startup, but today, you know, they are as large or influential as conglomerates, like, an Info Edge. And, the next generation of startups like a Make My Trip or an India Mart to, you know, the recent slew of, startups that we've had, the entire Zomato, Policy Bazaar, Nykaa kind of a cohort.
And how many public companies are there in India today, both on SME and the main exchange, if rough numbers?
Yeah, I think, the material or meaningful number of companies in India, which are listed would probably be anywhere between 200 to 500 is what I'd say. You know, the ones that are tracked, in any sense or semblance by the analysts who matter in the country today and are typically on the radar of important institutional investors.
And out of these 24 startups that have gone public, how many of these would come under those 500?
I think most of them, I'd say more than 20 of them would be covered by analysts very, very seriously. Probably 15 odd of these startups would be traded reasonably frequently, and the rest would be followed more from the curiosity lens, because I mean we know that the venture back cohort, just as it is in US and China, would become like a material and meaningful part of our total market cap. So people want to really track, in terms of what's happening in these market. I think the other very, very important lens is that, Mamaearth, for instance, right? I mean, it's today a fairly large and important company. I think the market cap would be anywhere between, 12,000 to 14,000 crores at this point in time, right? Even if it were a 2,000 crore market cap company and it wasn't very material, from a trading perspective, it'll be a very, very important company for analysts to track. Why? Because it decides the trade that you want to play on a Unilever or ITC tomorrow. Right. So from that perspective, from Channel Check's perspective, I think some of our public as well as private cohort, which interestingly is tracked very, very closely by, the street and the analyst, becomes very, very important.
Understood. And you mentioned about US and China, right? So 24 of our startups have gone IPO, and overall, I think in the public market, there will be between 4,000 to 10,000 companies covering mid cap, small caps, right? Combined market cap of India is $4 trillion, right? What was the percentage of startups that would occupy public markets in US and China? Any rough percentages that you would have?
Sorry, so I won't have, so to say, you know, the numbers off my head, but, you know, it would probably be, you know, material double digit number. And I think, you know, Siddharth, going back to your previous question, I think one of the reasons why this entire listed cohorts of startup in India has become very, very important is because of the sheer growth rates that they have, right? So a typical Indian startup today would probably grow at, you know, 1.7 times what a mid-cap company in India would grow at, right? And mid-cap companies by definition are supposed to be faster growing companies. They probably grow at, you know, 40 to 50% higher pace than your nifty companies. And our startups are growing at, you know, almost 50 to 60% higher rate, you know, than some of these companies, which is the reason why, you know, their multiples typically would be like, you know, 1.7 times your mid-cap multiples, right? And the markets, when it comes to the tech-driven world, if there's one thing that they reward more than anything else, it is growth, right? And which is the reason why these are very, very important companies for the markets at large.
And India startups' combined market cap of these 24 companies would be what? $50 billion?
We'd be close to about 70-odd billion dollars in terms of valuation, Siddharth, from about a $4 trillion valuation that the Indian markets have at large.
Almost just 2%, right?
Just about 2%. And just about 2%.
And US and China is more than 10%.
Certainly.
Right. So we can assume safely that in the long scheme of things, Indian startup would also track towards like 10% of Indian public market cap.
In the long term, yes. In the medium term, Siddharth, I would say the jury is still out. So, you know, with our 4 trillion market cap, our capacity to absorb companies every year is probably about, you know, say 2 to 2.5% of the market cap, which is anywhere between say 80 to 100 odd billion dollars. Yes. Now, half of this would probably be absorbed by, you know, the QIPs that are happening with companies that people have tracked over the years.
20 years, for example.
Yeah. For 20 years, for example, right? So today, for instance, you know, if Bajaj Finance wants to do a QIP, yes. I've been tracking Bajaj Finance forever. I know it's a very, very high quality company. I'd want to reserve, you know, some of my dry powder, okay, as a fund to invest into these companies. There'll be PSU divestitures, right? So I think more than half would go into the existing listed companies, whereas the rest, 50%, right, would probably be more tuned towards newer issues. And within these newer issues, we'd probably end up taking, you know, anywhere between, you know, a third to maximum half of some of these newer issues, right? So say companies like a Hyundai, companies like a Jio Financial, right? Companies like Jio, they would end up doing an IPO in India, right? Now, these IPOs are very, very highly anticipated IPOs, which end up pulling out a lot of liquidity from the markets, right? Does it make our job as a startup ecosystem easier? Hell no.
Yeah. And so you are saying roughly Indian public markets can allow on an average day or an average year, $10 billion of startups to go public in India.
That's the very maximum. See, I mean, if you look at the last few years data.
Combined. $10 billion combined.
Yeah. So anywhere between... what is said is that for FY25, this particular financial year, we'll end up having IPOs around 1 lakh crore, which is what? About 12 odd billion dollars?
Yeah.
Just $12 billion, right? So what does that leave for us? Maybe about, you know, 3 to 4 odd billion dollars, yeah, in terms of total IPO size.
But let's say what happened in 2021, 2022. I think they were, though people discount them that startups didn't do well, they were amazing years for startup IPOs. Further, the reason is Zomato today is a $20 billion company, right? It went public somewhere at between 8 to 10 billion dollars. Paytm went public at 20, $25 billion, though it came back, right? But in that particular year, if we just, Nykaa went, Policy Bazaar went, right? Some other companies, even Nazara was like 1 year behind. So that combined market cap of these companies which went public in India was like roughly $40 billion traded on the public market.
Probably, yeah. Their market cap was probably $40 billion. And so that, it's a very, very good question that you ask. So, see, I mean, and it has very, very important and strong ramifications for us, you know, as participants in India's, you know, private market ecosystem. So, till about 3 years back, for instance, right, when we are trying to evaluate the fate of a company, when its meeting with God happens, Okay. When they finally, so to say, you know, start facing the rough and tumble of the public markets. It would have been my word against yours. ठीक है, आई विल शो यू कि यूएस में देखो यार ये कॉम्प्स चल रहे हैं, चाइना में यू नो दीज आर द कॉम्प्स दैट आर प्लेइंग आउट, राइट? ओके, आई डिस्काउंट और मल्टीप्लाइड बाय यू नो आर ग्रोथ रेट्स, बट देयर वाज नो डेफिनेट एम्पिरिकल एविडेंस अराउंड यू नो व्हाट फेट ऑफ आर कंपनीज वुड बी, राइट? सो व्हेनेवर अ कंप्लीटली न्यू प्राइस डिस्कवरी हैज टू हैपन, देयर हैज टू बी अ पीरियड ऑफ टर्बुलेंस इन बिटवीन, राइट? सो in our startup ecosystem, this entire, you know, new cohort started coming in anywhere between 2020 to 2021. Yeah. Why did they list at that point in time? Because the markets were great.
Yeah.
Interest rates were at the lowest. You know, there was worldwide reception around tech companies going public.
Liquidity was huge in the market.
Liquidity was huge. Liquidity was absolutely huge. Now, what were my valuations when I listed at that point in time? We were anywhere between, you know, 15 to 25 times, you know, forward revenue multiples. Now, in hindsight, you know, that looks absolutely crazy. But, you know, back then, there was a belief that, you know, I mean, the liquidity, the high liquidity regime, right, would stay forever. And the growth rates at certain point of time would compensate for these valuations. The last 3 years have been an absolute trial by fire for all of our listed cohort. And there have been so many learnings, right, which are important for this entire listed cohort and which can be taken to the private markets as well. So for instance, Siddharth, today, anywhere between, say, you know, 2023 to right now, and maybe for the foreseeable future as well, any company, any startup that is being valued at more than $100 million, I mean, forget about, you know, our unicorns, they are all being valued from the public market barometer.
Okay.
In the sense that, A, will this company be ever be able to go public? Right? Number two, when these companies go public, what are the kind of multiples that it will trade at? And if, as a growth investor, I've got complete clarity around these two aspects of a company is only when I'm parting with my money. Yeah. So I think this wisdom of the hindsight is a very, very important gift that we have as an ecosystem finally, right? So, I mean, one may argue that the entire venture funding in a country has, so to say, you know, fallen from, say, you know, $45 billion in 2021 to about, you know, $25 billion in 22 to about, you know, $9 to $10 billion in 23. And I mean, the jury is still out for this particular year, but I think having this history of listed startups in the country, and fortunately many of them have started doing much better now, and the valuations look a lot better and attractive, is a very, very important, you know, lesson that we have in our armory. I think the other very important aspect is important market participants, whether it be mutual funds, whether it be HNIs, whether it be retail, okay? They have experienced two dozens of our startups now. They've seen the good, bad, and ugly, right? For the first time, their trysts with, you know, founders of our ecosystem have happened. Public market mein to in logon ko promoters bolte hain, right? Promoters bolte hain. So this entire journey of our startup ecosystem founders becoming promoters has happened. And our mutual funds today, our equity research analysts today, our HNIs today, finally know how to value platform companies, how to value startups, right? How to look at our ecosystem. So say, I mean, in 2022, for instance, right? After our startups listed and there was euphoria and then, you know, there was a crash in the share prices of some of these companies, right? Paytm share price, you know, fell down to, say, you know, anywhere between 1/3 to 1/4 of, you know, what the listing price was. Zomato came down to about, you know, say 40 to 45 odd rupees. The kind of questions that some of these public market participants would ask you was absolutely insane. Arey yaar, ye founder ne na golden visa karaya hua hai. What if, you know, this guy leaves the Indian shore? Arey yaar, uska 15-20% company mein pada hua hai yaar. Oh yaar, these founders have done, say, you know, 50 to 100 crores of secondary. What if they see two or three bad quarters? They've got 5% in the company. What if they leave the company? Right? So, I mean, these are the kind of questions that as private market investors, we never thought about.
Agree.
Right?
And nobody thought about, let's say, for example, this is a case study in itself, right? Uh-huh. Zomato went public between $8 to $10 billion of market cap. The day they bought Blinkit, and that's when their share price tumbled below ₹50, which was like $4-5 billion of market cap. The public market just reduced it, that Zomato has done the biggest mistake in its life. And today when Zomato is performing well, Blinkit is performing well, Goldman Sachs has rated that Blinkit today is valued at $8 billion, 40% of Zomato's market cap, and Zomato's market cap is today $20 billion. Then public market analysts, investors are all praising Zomato. So how is the sudden sentiment change in the last 1 year regarding the same company?
No, that's a very, very good question, Siddharth. And I'll tell you why it's a very, very important question. Zomato in many ways is the bellwether of our startup ecosystem, right? So in a very, very similar way that Infosys for a very, very long time was the bellwether of the Indian stock markets. Yeah. I'll tell you why. Zomato in many ways became a public company before it actually became one, yeah. Right? A material part of Info Edge's market cap was attributed to their shareholding in Zomato, right? So much before they went public, their financials would be made public in Info Edge conference calls, right? Dipinder would come and, he would talk about his company. So they saw a quasi-public life much before they became public, right? Now, today, obviously, it's the highest market cap company when it comes to the Indian startup ecosystem at, $20 billion. Yeah. It's seen the trials and tribulations of the voting machine that public market is very, very up and close, right? So what was the consensus view around Zomato, right? Obviously people were very, very impressed, when they listed because they could relate to it as a brand. They could relate to it as a service. So beyond hard-nosed money managers, the HNI pool or the retail pool, right? I mean, they could relate to Zomato as a stock more than say they would relate to MapMyIndia.
Yeah.
Right.
Or
a rate gain, right? In that regard, because I mean, that's an enterprise product, right? Now, after that, tryst with destiny, right, came the tougher phase, yeah. Right? They acquired Blinkit, yeah. Right? The consensus view was that, listen, my food delivery business, which is turning profitable, is slowing in terms of growth. Whereas Blinkit, which is actually the growth driver, of the company, I don't have visibility of that becoming profitable anytime soon. Now, what is the broad consensus view today? And, I have to give credit to the management that they stuck to their guns. They took decisions that seemed very, very unpopular at that point in time. And see, what one needs to realize, especially as, participants in the startup ecosystem who, predominantly deal with companies which are private, where, all the discussions, all the strategic decisions are taken, in four walls, yeah. Right? Taking along, four or five board members, right? Taking along 15 investors or 10 investors to make a tough decision is still easy.
Yeah.
But when, your stock gets hammered, right? When you are judged by, somebody who's put in who's bought one share for ₹40 or ₹50 in your stock, when you have to be responsible, for that little guy, some of these decisions are very, very difficult and they're taken in all public glare, right? What is the consensus view today, right? That the company is showing classic platform characteristics. What does it mean in terms of food delivery, right? My market is expanding. My TAM is expanding. More than that, quick commerce today is seen as a segment which will probably take away a lot of share from both your, mom and pop Kirana stores as well as the horizontal e-commerce platforms. Now, nobody looked at quick commerce from that lens, right? You look at reams and reams of sort of say newspaper articles or reports or opinions, right? I mean, who wants deliveries in 15 minutes, yes. right? Who cares, right? Arey yaar, ye to chalega nahi. Look at it now. Everybody wants delivery in, you know, 15, 20 minutes, right? And B, people are willing to pay for that convenience, right? I mean, look at the P&Ls of these companies. They are looking very, very healthy and, you know, the future looks bright. So, A, the fact that quick commerce would take away market share from horizontals and kirana stores, and B, the line of sight to steady state profitability has led to the $8 billion valuation.
Understood. And so thereby you saying that tomorrow Swiggy list, like Swiggy is almost prepared to list and Zepto is also preparing itself to list, right, by flipping itself back to India. You say the quick commerce combined market cap just of India could be like $40-50 billion.
Yes. I mean, today if a DMart is being valued at what it is, right? I mean, I don't think it's outrageous to believe that, you know, the quick commerce market cap in India can go all the way up to, say, even $100 billion. Yeah, or even a DMart. Because, I mean, you look at the customer profile of a DMart as against, you know, customer profile of, so to say, our quick commerce companies. I mean, DMart would be the Costco equivalent of India, right? I mean, har roz sasta saman, right? So if I have to make that trek of, you know, 15 minutes in an auto as an Indian housewife, right? Just because I can save those, you know, 500 or 1000 rupees in a month, which really matters to me, I'll go there. But the real consuming class of India, the top 2 or 3% of India, right, who are not supposedly as price sensitive and, you know, who got all the money to pay, you know, they are there on a quick commerce platform.
Yeah. And I think that is what is driving e-commerce of India. Though e-commerce of India hasn't faced a public eye yet because Flipkart is being owned by Walmart, and the Amazon is obviously owned by the Amazon in the US. So nobody knows the internal numbers right now, at least 60% of Indian e-commerce, right?
No, you're so right. I mean, in this regard, India's been a relatively tough hunting ground for horizontal platforms, right? I mean, as a horizontal platform, given, you know, the price sensitive market or, you know, the AOVs or ticket sizes in India tend to be very, very different, right? I mean, as a horizontal e-commerce platform, A, at one end, I'll be challenged by, say, the Meeshos of the world, right? 300 rupees ki saadi kharidni hai, kahan se kharidun? Meesho mein milegi mujhe. Agar mujhe, ghar mein mehman aa rahe hain, ek ghante ke andar pyaaz chahiye, tomato chahiye, right? Aapko gouda cheese chahiye, wo kahan se milega? Mereko quick commerce platform mein milega, right? So, building an Amazon in India is much, much, much tougher than building an Amazon in the US. But what is the good news? I think it has been conclusively proven that A, not only that these platforms can grow, but, you know, they can also make money, right? Because, Siddharth, if you look at, you know, some of these fast growing companies in India, I think you will see echoes of their success in the US market and what, you know, the US market have rewarded these companies for. Say, for instance, a Netflix or an Amazon. They always traded at 4 to 5 times the S&P multiple. So S&P multiple would anyway be, say, it would probably be around, you know, 17 odd times, you know, your forward earnings. Whereas these companies, if you look at a 10-year history, they would have traded at anywhere between, you know, 65, 70 to 90, 95 times their P.
Yeah.
And yet they delivered 4 to 5 times the return. There were two reasons for that. One is premium growth. These companies over a 10-year period consistently grew at, you know, more than 20% year on year, right? In S&P index, the percentage of companies that grow over a 5-year period by more than 20% is 2%. Only 2% of the S&P companies grow at more than 20% for an extended period of time. Now, these companies, you know, grew at that pace for a period of, you know, 10 years, 15 years. I mean, in the case of a Google, it grew at that pace for a period of, say, you know, 15 years, despite the fact that I've got a, you know, $100 odd billion revenue base, right? And these companies really rewarded their shareholders despite, you know, their premium valuations. Why? Because they kept growing. B, their margins expanded. So in the case of Netflix, it would have gone from, you know, say 5 or 7% to about, you know, 19% in this period. In case of Amazon, it would have grown from, say, 8% to 13%, right? The belief is that our companies in India, whether it be a Policy Bazaar, whether it be a Zomato, would show that same premium growth, and B, it is fair to value them at their earning power multiple rather than, you know, what the present earnings are.
So you are effectively saying that Zomato in India, which is $20 billion in future, can be more valuable than, though there are no comparables, than Unilever, which is $70 billion, or DMart, which is somewhere in that range. Right? Is, you're saying that's the case?
Of course. Of course. That's what the market tends to believe, which is the reason why, you know, all these companies are trading at anywhere between, you know, 40 to 50 times their FY26 EBITDA multiples.
Okay. Which is quite surprising. I don't know, right, whether Indian markets would be okay with that.
Yeah. So, see, I mean, it's a very, very fair question, right? And, I mean, even though we're in the business of optimism, right? As a startup ecosystem, it's important to be, it's important to wear, you know, the hat of a realist as well, you know, every once in a while. See, I mean, this 45 to 50 multiple may come down to 30, yeah. But as long as I'm showing premium growth, as long as I'm showing, you know, 20% to 25% plus growth for the next 5 years, as long as an equity investor, I'm willing to underwrite that.
The comparison between Indian tech companies and US tech companies might not be fair from a public market investor's eyes, primarily because the US companies went international really well, right? Today you see Amazon in so many countries. Uber you see, right?
Yeah.
Is present across so many countries and it's either number one or number two. They're never number three, right? Similarly, Google is number one in whichever country they are present in because of, it's the same for Netflix, right? So Zomato, on the other hand, folded it international operations in many countries. There is no case study of an Indian company till now, which has made its mark yet on international markets, being a top three player in any other market.
No. That is a very, very true observation. But despite that, why is it that a Zomato trades at a premium multiple as compared to, say, a DoorDash, right? The reason for that is that, I think all of it, you know, eventually when it comes to tech stocks, it comes down to growth. Now, how does growth come from? Growth can come from, selling more units of the same. Growth can come from international expansion. Growth can come from, you know, product innovation. Yeah. It's just that we have taken the dimension of, you know, selling more of the same rather than, you know, selling to international markets. Is the reason why Zomato is not being punished for not being in the overseas market in the aggressive way as, say, an Uber, you know, which is chasing a TAM, right? I mean, it's chasing a $1 trillion TAM.
And so we discussed a lot on Zomato. Let's discuss about a couple of other companies, right, before I do some other topics. So then why is public market punishing Paytm? It's such a fantastic company, it has so many business lines, right? Though it's always in tussle with RBI or something or the other, one business get blocked. But it has, I think, almost 15 to 20 businesses.
Okay. So, let me answer this question from a very, very, so to say, fundamental lens. Okay. What is it that the public markets have rewarded? If I look at a 20 or 30 year period.
Yeah.
These are companies like, till very, very recently, an HDFC Bank, a Unilever, an Asian Paints, right? A Marico, a Pidilite, right? What do these companies do? I mean, if you look at it, koi sabun bech raha hai, koi tel bech raha hai, koi paints bech raha hai, koi loan bech raha hai. These are very, very simple and basic companies which are selling staples. What keeps them at elevated valuations? Two things. One is that I have proven my corporate governance chops over a period of 20 years, right? Now, corporate governance is something that only your track record justifies to you, right? And here, past performance is the best, signal of your future performance, right? I mean, unlike what, so many of these mutual funds ads say that past performance is no guarantee of future performance. When it comes to things like corporate governance, when it comes to things like product innovation, right? I mean, your past performance is a marker of what your future performance would be. Number two, the consistency and predictability in their performance, right? I mean, public markets like predictability, right? Yaar, chalo, 20% year on year, aap grow kar rahe ho consistently year after year after year after year, right? I don't want trouble. I don't want to, switch my portfolio very, very often, right? And the third reason is market leadership,
yeah.
Right? When you're a market leader in a country like India, right, you would be rewarded. So if I look at it from a demand supply lens, if let's say, I'm a fund manager sitting in Stockholm, if I'm a fund manager sitting in Paris, mere boss ne mere ko bola, yaar, are India shining chal raha hai, yaar, kisi mein paisa dal do. What will you do? You'll pick up one of these five companies, are yaar, Bajaj Finance, no brainer, let me put my money in that. Oh, Asian Paints, yaar, 20 year track record, let me put my money in that, right? This is what gives them a very, very high valuation. In Paytm's case, I think, why the markets have not rewarded them as much is because of the entire regulatory uncertainty, which makes it very, very difficult for me to judge what my revenue growth or would be, say 1 year down the line, 2 year down the line, 3 year down the line. I mean, if there is predictability, even if the growth rate is low, even if the profits are not as high, it becomes easier, right? In the fintech world, it is very, very difficult to ascribe for regulatory certainty, especially in this particular case, which is the reason why the markets have not rewarded them as much as they would have rewarded some of our other startups till now.
And let's talk about some of the other companies. Right now, it's very well understood that public market investors don't like inconsistency. So even if it's not the fault of the company, it's a tussle between the regulator and the company, they'll stay away from it.
Of course. I mean, see, there are easier things to do. It's an important time to kind of, take a step back and look at the nuance of our venture world, our private markets as against the public markets. So that you've been an investor or you are an investor and a very successful one at that. When do you get entry onto cap tables of companies?
Very early, right?
Very, very selectively.
Very, very selectively.
Only when they're looking to raise money is when you can get in. Yeah. Right? If the founder is overcapitalized, he'll say, Arey Siddharth, not right now. Whenever I'm raising money, I'll let you know. Yeah. But if you want an entry into a public market company, you can get that entry or an exit at any time you want. Right? So I think this is again, an important nuance to appreciate with regards to some of these companies that, I've got so many choices. I've got so many choices. 50 companies to Nifty mein hai, right? There's a pool of 200 companies that I have to invest in. So why get into something where I may get a high return, but when I adjust it for risk, I may not get as high a return. Whereas all of us as participants in the private markets, right? While we get to see higher IRRs, our hunting ground in terms of, the time window that we have to get into some of these companies is very, very limited, which is the reason why I would say, public markets are as much a voting machine as, they are a weighing scale.
And then there are two categories of other companies, right, which are consumer brands, for example, Mamaearth, Nykaa, Go Colour, Sula, right, and even some like car trade kind of, right? So how does public market view each of these companies, right? All these consumer brands, right? Are they comparing them to likes of Unilever at any point of time when investment is happening?
No, absolutely, Siddharth. So, if I'm a Mamaearth, right? The cohort with which I would be compared would be Godrej Consumer Care, would be a Unilever. Now, Look at these companies. The volume growth over the last few years has been very, 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 very slow. Right? B, if I want to play on the new consuming class that's coming up in India, which is as comfortable buying online as it is buying offline, number one. Number two, they are open to experimentation, right? My father used to use Lifebuoy. It doesn't mean that I have to use Lifebuoy, right? My mother used to use Sunsilk. It doesn't mean that I have to use Sunsilk, right? I mean, what would be considered, fuddy-duddy brands for this generation. Now, agar consuming class bad raha hai, which is the cohort of companies that would benefit from this growing cohort, right? And does it reflect in the kind of growth rates that I'm delivering, right? I mean, Mamaearth at, say, an expected revenue of about, 2,000 odd crores in this particular financial year, which is not immaterial. Yeah. It's fairly large, right? It is still growing at anywhere between, 27 to 30 odd percent, right? And can I bake in for the fact that their offline penetration, right? Shelf space would go over a period of time. Can I expect the product innovation factory, right, to continue churning out, new products, getting into new segments? Can I expect the economies of scale to play out, right, when it comes to the margins, which have been expanding slowly, slowly, right, to breach at least, say half the margins of what Unilever is playing out today? If I can underwrite that, then as an investor, I'm willing to pay the premium prices at which, some of these companies would be trading at right now.
Got it. And doesn't the market reward for example, let's say the founders of Mamaearth are in their very early 40s, mm-hmm. right, have been running the company for just over like a decade. So there is still 30-year-old window, whereas the chairman of HUL just retired mm-hmm. 1 year ago. Mm-hmm. So this predictability in management in these startups that are going public.
No, absolutely. So it's a great question that you asked. What are the two aspects that the market looks for when it comes to founders of startups or, companies out of the venture grown ecosystem? The first is that does the management, do they think like owners? Do they think like, custodians of investors' wealth? And the second part is, do they understand what is driving value? I mean, I can be a founder, but what if I don't know, what is driving value for my company? If there is a check mark in terms of both, then, the market would certainly reward for that, right? I mean, look at the case of, say, an Amazon as against an eBay or a Yahoo, right? They consistently had, one CEO for more than 20 years' time, right? Who was the founder? Founders are able to take tougher calls, right? They're not playing for a 2 year or 3 year tenure. They can take unpopular calls. They've got more skin in the game, right? So in this case, in particular, right? I mean, the founders would have, a shareholding of more than 20% in the company, right? I mean, my net worth, lives and dies with this company, right? So if I have to take unpopular decisions in the short term as a founder of a company, I'm better equipped to do that. Number two, given that, I've seen the journey with this company over 5, 7, 10 year period, right? I understand the DNA of a company a lot better. So I am probably in a better position to understand what are the levers of value addition, when it comes to some of these companies. The comparison with Unilever, in particular, maybe a tad unfair because, Unilever, for all practical purposes, it's been the CEO factory, right? For this country, right? And almost every CEO of Unilever has come through the ranks, right? And, has been tried and tested on, what it takes to be a great CEO. But when it comes to a trade-off between a founder and a professional CEO, I mean, if you look at the track record of, the hundreds of companies, in US, in China, in India, I think the choice is very, very clear. When you look at the track record of companies that have shown premium growth as against those that have not, right? I mean, the track record in terms of returns has been very, very clear. So I think these are the two parameters in which most of our startup ecosystem listed cohorts wins over some of the larger legacy players, is what I'd say.
And let's say, for example, there is a very active SME exchange, which was not earlier possible. Almost every IPO that goes on SME exchange in India is 200, 300 times subscribed, right? Then there is the main exchange, right? So how many startups between the SME exchange and main exchange you expect going public every year consistently for the next 5 years?
So much. See, I mean, in terms of SME exchange, A, I don't have a very, very nuanced view. And B, I've been personally very, very skeptical about, you know, companies listing with a 25 crore, 50 crore kind of a float. When it comes to the main exchange, I mean, if you look at, say, 1 lakh crores worth of IPO happening every year for the next 5 years or so, right? And an average company, and say, you know, startups accounting for a third of that, right? With, say, anywhere between a 1,000 to 2,000 odd crores kind of a total float. I think we're talking about anywhere between, you know, 15 to 25 odd startups listing potentially every year.
And so you do you see like companies like Traxen listing more often in India on the main exchange at, let's say, $8 million or 60 crores of revenue?
I think some of these companies will list because as an investor, I want an exit, right? As a founder, I may be more comfortable with my life as a listed company, right? There will be demand for those, but will that be a sustainable solution? Or will there be like a huge pipeline of such companies that the market will be able to absorb? I'm not sure.
Let's say talk about the 10 IPOs that are going to go in India this year. Ola Electric, Office, Unicommerce, First Cry, MobiQuick, Ixigo, right? Some of them. So they will definitely unlock like $15 billion of market cap. But do you think there's enough excitement from public markets to latch on to these companies right now?
The excitement from the public markets would be a function of pricing.
Yeah.
Right? In the past, IPOs or listing events from our ecosystem, I mean, we've been accused of not leaving enough value on the table. Yaar, tum toh bahut fine pricing karte ho har cheez mein, right?
I think Mamaearth should be given due credit for that. For example, their last private round was $1.2 billion in 2021. And even when they listed in 2023,
they listed at the same valuation. Yeah.
And they got rewarded for it. Now the company's market cap is roughly $1.8 to $2 billion.
Yeah. So I think all of us as the ecosystem have learned, right? What are the public market rules to play by, right? I mean, if I really want to be rewarded over the medium to long term, which is what matters, I need to leave some value on the table for people here and now, right? And I think I'm sure there'll be a lot of excitement for a lot of these companies. I mean, you look at a First Cry, you look at the filing that they've made, right? I mean, it's a company which is still growing at a supernormal rate, you know, despite their scale. It's a company, you know, which can turn profitable at the flick of the switch. You look at a company like Ixigo, which has filed, right? I mean, I think it's going to be a classic case study. Here is a company which is operating in a sector which has been discovered for the last 20 years, right? And it has almost, if I remember the number correctly from their filing, they had about, you know, 70 crores of profit in the first three quarters of this financial year, right? It's a question of, you know, how convincingly I'm able to communicate my right to win, right? In a market where there are like, you know, four or five different OTAs to the investors. So, in the case of Ixigo, what is their right to win? And, you know, it's a very, very fascinating journey. It started as a meta engine.
Yeah.
Then it turned into a OTA. What is its right to win today? That there is an entire generation of Indians who are going to fly for the first time. Choti-choti cities. Right? They have an airport today, right? And which is the app that I'm going to use? I'm going to use the app which I usually use when it comes to my train travel or my bus travel to graduate to flights, right? As an Ixigo, you know, which has had a right to win when it comes to train travel, you know, probably being the market leader there, or bus travel, right, where they're increasingly getting active, right? Can I bring the same user on to flights as against other OTAs that operate in the market? So I think these are the kind of nuances that the street will probably look for when it comes to assessing the right to win of some of these companies, which on the surface may look among, you know, as, so to say, you know, the third horse or a fourth horse in a four horse race, right? So if you're able to appreciate these nuances as an investor, if the pricing is fair, of course, you know, you would come into some of these issues.
And how does market understand things like rate gain or Map My India? Because the normal consumer is not touching and feeling these, or normal investor is also not able to touch and feel these kind of companies.
Yeah. So, see, I mean, the prime drivers of the share price on some of these companies would be, small institutional investors or HNIs, right? That a venture-backed company hai, yaar, growth achhi hai, profitability achhi hai, founders ka governance achha hai, right? I mean, they're probably, say, you know, among the top 10%, 20% companies in terms of governance, right? Which means that when these companies double or triple in size, larger institutions will start taking interest. So I will evaluate them from the lens of a normal mid-cap or small-cap stock. I will give them premium for their growth. Plus, in a country like India, even with their kind of market caps, I will have at least a few analysts who are covering them reasonably regularly, which is the reason why these companies are, anywhere between a 10 to 30% premium when it comes to their revenue multiples as compared to, say, a Freshworks, which is, again, you know, a fantastic company with a $700 million kind of scale, right? Which will find it hard to get that kind of, you know, liquidity in the US markets, right? Or India markets abhi kafi deep hai, you know, when it comes to, you know, small cap or mid cap stocks, right? And even foreign institutional investors, the ones that matter, you know, they always have access to the India market.
And as my last question, right? For normal people who are working in startups or in tech fields in India, and India doesn't have seen a lot of millionaires come up as compared to US and China and other developed markets, right? What are the tailwinds that are supporting Indian startup ecosystem that can go public for the next 5-6 years that can unlock wealth for the masses right now?
No, that's a very, very good question. I think for the startup ecosystem at large, and, you know, if I'm, say, a P&L leader, or if I'm, say, a, you know, senior employee, you know, working in a company, I think it's become a lot easier than before to evaluate and understand, right, whether my ESOPs are worth the paper that they're written on or not, right? I think a lot of founders have become a lot more conscious, even as private companies, to have a liquidity event every 6 months to 1 year or 2 years for the employees that they matter. That, theek hai, mera ek primary round ho raha hai, alongside that, you know, let me do a secondary round where my ESOP holders are allowed to liquidate, say, you know, 25% of their vested ESOPs as a part of this particular round. I think they've become a lot more conscious. So I think as a P&L leader, you know, if you look at the last discovered valuation of the company, what is the kind of investor interest that some of these companies are seeing today, where we are living in a slow burn kind of market when it comes to the private world, right? I think it's become a lot more easier to underwrite, you know, what I'm buying into in terms of stock, than as compared to, say, you know, a 2021, where there was a craze of, you know, getting into unicorns. So, I mean, this is the conversation that I've had with one of my founders, that, listen, will I turn a unicorn this year? My question was, why? You are one of those guys who don't care about turning a unicorn. And his grouse was that, listen, all the people that I'm interviewing today, they want to know if I'm turning a unicorn, only then I'll come and work for you. Whereas the argument should have been exactly the opposite. If you're not a unicorn, I've probably got more runway to make more money from my ESOPs than otherwise. So I think over the last 3 years, given the slew of listings that we've seen, given the way we've seen how some of our private companies are being valued from that same public market lens, I think we are all the more wiser, participants in our startup ecosystem than we were, probably 3 years back.
The the probability is much, much higher for wealth creation to happen at a massive scale.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. So I think that first wave of wealth creation in India, where wealth was dispersed beyond founders and promoters, was what our IT services companies did, right? The second wave was what our banks and financial services institutions did. I think that third wave is being brought about by our startups, where, you know, we'll probably end up seeing, you know, lakhs of people actually, becoming rich by being simply employees rather than, you know, becoming founders in their own right. And everything said and done, this is probably, you know, one area of India where there is actual growth and there is actual wealth creation, right? I mean, in pockets and not just on paper, that is happening with, some of our companies that has gone public and, have paved the path for so many others being Neelkanth, so to say, by, you know, absorbing the pulls and pressures of being, the pioneers of facing the heat and dust and the brunt of the public markets from our ecosystem.
Thank you so much, Kashyap. It's been a very data-oriented, very detailed conversation on the Indian public markets of what they hold for startups in India. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Siddharth. Pleasure being on your show. And, look forward to our subsequent conversation as well. All the best to you and your viewers.
Thank you so much.